Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso. Last week, we told you about a massive influx of undocumented children and teens crossing into the U.S., overwhelming U.S. holding facilities in the Southwest. Now, seeking to relieve overcrowding in Texas, the Border Patrol has announced that starting this week, it will bring undocumented Central American immigrants from Texas to California. The first groups will include families, not unaccompanied minors, to ease overcrowding of facilities due to the influx of children fleeing violence in Central America. The families will be brought to San Diego and El Centro to help alleviate what President Barack Obama called a humanitarian crisis. ABC News this week interviewed a 17-year-old girl who was among those immigrants apprehended attempting to cross into the U.S. In a tearful voice, she told them that she fled her home in Central America after her brother was murdered and a gang threatened her with harm if she would not join. On her journey here, she was gang-raped by several men before reaching the U.S., she said. Here, she was detained, but eventually released into custody of relatives in Florida, where she now awaits an asylum hearing to determine if she can stay in the U.S. or will be sent back to face further threats of violence in her homeland. San Diego has not yet said where the immigrants will be housed. Escondido refused to accept them, as did the owner of the former Sharp Hospital building in Point Loma, where the federal government sought to house the families temporarily, since all the federal holding facilities are full. The families were transferred from Texas, where facilities are so overcrowded that children were crammed into warehouses and forced to live and eat where others were urinating due to a lack of toilets, according to media reports. Without cots or even blankets, the youngsters huddled under aluminum foil sheets on concrete cold cell floors. Some have escaped from human traffickers, physical abuse, or gang threats in their homelands. Many of these immigrants are seeking asylum here because they are afraid of violence if they return to their homelands, or even death. After they arrive in San Diego and El Centro, they will be processed first by the Border Patrol, after which Immigration and Customs Enforcement, or ICE, will decide on a case-by-case basis if they must be detained for deportation or security checks, or if they may be released and asked to return 2 weeks later for hearing at an ICE office closest to their final destination, such as for those with relatives in the U.S. President Obama has issued an executive order to require that unaccompanied minors be provided lawyers to assure that they are represented in court. Locally, Casa Cornelia has been providing legal help to the children. The organization's website states, Casa Cornelia remains committed to assisting all unaccompanied children who are at risk in San Diego. At the same time, the group says it's working closely with other agencies to help children placed at the Ventura County Naval Base emergency reception area near Oxnard. The group is also accepting donations to help protect these vulnerable children through Casa Cornelia's Children's Program. Sean Moran with the National Border Patrol Council suggested that drug cartels may be taking advantage of agents' attention being diverted to process the influx of child immigrants. They're making sure that everyone that comes across the border surrenders to Border Patrol agents away from the port of entry, because then it further ties up our agents, he said, Fox News reported. Then the cartels can further move their drugs, weapons, and the people they really want to get across the border, Moran added. Not everyone wants the children to stay. Some have blamed the increase on a belief by young immigrants that America will allow them to stay here, and that's a belief based in part on misunderstanding of the Obama administration policy that does allow existing residents who came here as young children to avoid deportation. But that policy does not apply to newcomers. The explanation may be simplistic, since violence in Central America has recently escalated, also accounting for a flood of refugees seeking haven not only in the U.S., but Mexico and other countries as well. Supervisor Diane Jacob has called the crisis a federal problem and said that a federal solution is needed. But Enrique Morones, founder of the human rights group Border Angels, said that immigrant rights groups and social service groups, along with San Diego's governmental authorities, are preparing to meet the needs of the new arrivals. He wants to see help for children and families who have already suffered a great deal and whose lives and safety could be at risk if they are deported. Morones concluded, "This society is judged on how we treat our children."
It's warm, it's dry, it's the 4th of July. These words make fire officials cringe, says Fire Chief Sam DiGiovanna, East County Magazine's in-house fire chief and columnist. It will be a long 3-day 4th of July weekend. As drought conditions worsen and the fire danger escalates, fire officials recommend everyone attend public fireworks shows and leave the lighting to the professionals. Purchase or use of fireworks by individuals is illegal across San Diego County. The problem is many cities that ban fireworks are already seeing an influx of illegal fireworks being set off, says Chief DiGiovanna. To help reduce the risk of fire, keep barbecue grills away from anything that can burn, such as your house, car, or dry vegetation. Don't leave the grill unattended while it's cooking. Keep children and pets away from the grill. Make sure coals are completely extinguished and cold before disposing of them. While outdoors, stay hydrated and consume lots of water. Avoid direct sun. Make sure your pets are kept indoors as loud noises such as fireworks can scare them and cause them to run away. Contact your local fire department and visit www.4thofjulysafety.com for additional safety information. Drive safely and have a happy 4th of July. This is Leon Thompson reporting for East County Magazine.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community. This is Miriam Raftery with today's Green Scene Report. Honeybees are vital for our food supply, since a quarter of all foods that Americans eat depend on pollination by bees. But bee populations fell by 23% over the winter and have been declining in recent years. So now the White House has set up a task force to try and reverse this disturbing trend. President Obama has directed the Environmental Protection Agency and the U.S. Department of Agriculture to lead a task force to develop a strategy within 6 months for combating the decline in bees and other pollinators. He also announced $8 billion in funding for farmers and ranchers in the Midwest to establish new honeybee habitats. Honeybees add over $15 billion a year in value to America's agricultural crops, so failure to invest in saving the bees that pollinate these crops could be even costlier in the long run. The number of managed honeybee colonies in the U.S. has declined steadily over the past 60 years, from 6 million colonies or beehives in 1947 to just 2.5 million today. Some crops are almost exclusively pollinated by honeybees. California's almond industry alone requires the pollination services of about 1.4 million beehives each year, 60% of all beehives in America, yielding 80% of the worldwide almond production worth $4.8 billion a year. California's almond industry is at severe risk because of the dramatic decline in honeybees. The president's budget also includes $50 million for research into pollinator declines across multiple federal agencies, partnering with state and local governments, tribes, and businesses to protect honeybees and other pollinators. Now, there are several theories for why populations of bees, as well as monarch butterflies and other pollinators, have seen sharp population declines, including a condition called colony collapse disorder, in which beehives suffer a sudden and catastrophic loss of bees. These include exposure to pesticides, loss of genetic diversity, diseases, loss of habitat and food sources. Some environmental organizations say the president's actions don't go far enough. Friends of the Earth told Reuters News Service that the administration should ban the use of neonicotinoids, a class of pesticides that has been linked to bee deaths. The federal government will also work to restore the monarch butterfly migration using research and habitat improvements that will benefit monarchs and other native pollinators. These actions support the February 2014 joint statement issued by President Obama, Prime Minister Harper of Canada, and President Nieto of Mexico to renew and expand collaboration between North American nations to conserve the monarch butterfly.
Sheriff's deputies in Lemon Grove had made a key breakthrough in a string of burglaries of homes being fumigated, where thieves wore gas masks to be able to steal belongings from homeowners. On June 28th, deputies arrested Sergio Perez, 21, and James St. Clair, 22, after responding to a call at 2271 Washington Street in Lemon Grove. The two men were in a vehicle. A search found a loaded handgun inside that had been stolen from a house 2 weeks ago that was also tented for fumigation. The two men were arrested for possession of a stolen firearm. Detectives searched the residences of Perez, a documented gang member, and St. Clair. At St. Clair's home, 8 adults and 2 children were contacted. One suspect was arrested for an outstanding felony warrant, and a gas mask was recovered, a necessary tool for robbing homes tented for fumigation. All 3 suspects have been booked into county jail, said Sergeant Greg Hampton. Reporting for East County Magazine, this is Leon Thompson.
This is Miriam Raftery with a heartwarming local business report. On Friday, the community turned out to help a small business owner who has suffered some hardships in recent months. Many know Shannon O'Dunn as the former Dean of Fine Arts at Cuyamaca College, a past city council candidate, and, most recently, the owner of O'Dunn Fine Arts in La Mesa. Shannon recently lost her husband to cancer, and then a freak accident forced her to close her art gallery for several weeks. On Friday, I stopped by the grand reopening of O'Dunn Fine Art in La Mesa, where I spoke with Shannon O'Dunn, who was clearly overwhelmed with emotion by the outpouring of community support.
Shannon, tell us a little bit about what happened and why you needed to have a grand reopening.
Miriam, first of all, I wanted to thank East County Magazine for the articles you've done. To let people know that we were going to reopen, that we were staying in business. It meant a lot to me as a small business owner, so thank you.
Our commitment is we want to be there to report the news that the community needs. And I know you've been through an awful lot.
Last 15 months have not been the best. Anywho, what happened here was one of those confluence of unhappy things. A large plate glass window, arguably the largest expanse of glass on the street.
Wow.
On La Mesa Boulevard. And a fellow who was a double amputee. He had 2 steel rod replacement or prosthetics, and apparently had, in turning the car into a parking space on June 2nd, his right leg slipped off of the brake and hit the gas. And I think it must have been pretty hard because he picked up the recycle bin out front, which we know is bolted to the concrete, and threw it against the building and ended up with his truck entirely inside the store.
Wow. So you never thought about having a drive-through gallery before?
No. Fortunately, no one was hurt. People were here immediately, instructed him to stay in the vehicle, mm-hmm. which was smart because
Thank goodness.
Had hanging glass in the in the window.
I saw the pictures. It was just a mess. It was a miracle, really, that of all the wonderful fine art paintings that you have here in the gallery, that the main damage was
The main damage was to the building itself, and that wasn't even structural damage. It's just one big mess, and we did have 2 paintings that had some minor damage, and we lost 2 frames. I did lose my family members, as I call them. I had a display of hand-built terrariums that I make, and I had them all in glass, of course, on a sheet of glass, which I now know the replacement cost for, and in the window, and that ended up on the floor as well. And so we had to replace all the flooring, all the wood flooring, all the carpeting. We had glass all the way to the back of the gallery, 40 feet away.
And you were closed for, 3 weeks?
We were closed from June 2nd until about 2 hours ago on June 27th.
And that is tough for a small business. I mean, most small businesses are already on the edge a little bit in this economy, so that had to be challenging. But one of the things I really admire about you, Shannon, is how you turn around, you have this, I guess maybe being an artist, you keep everything in perspective, pardon the pun, but you really have turned around and made sort of lemonade out of the lemons life gave you in this case, so to speak, and the community has really come forward to support you. Tell us about some of the things that's happened since this.
Well, I had one of my fave artists, Jason Situ, brought new paintings in down from L.A., Vanessa Russick's flower paintings.
Gorgeous.
She brought in several replacement ones. It gave us a chance to repaint and rehang the gallery and show things to a better advantage. It's something I'd planned to do later in the year, but it seemed like a good opportunity to do that, mm-hmm. as long as we were closed. That And people have been wonderful, just wonderful. I've gotten so many text messages, nice Facebook messages from, oh my gosh, Shannon, and this and that. And people know, and they're so kind. It's been a gift to be reminded how many friends this gallery has. And once again, very grateful for that.
Well, I see that the place is just packed tonight. We don't want to keep you much longer, but how is it going? I saw at least quite a few people. It looked like they were lined up there ringing up sales.
We've sold three nice paintings tonight, and we still have time. So who
Very
knows?
Good.
I'm delighted that people made the effort to come out to O'Dunn Fine Art. We're at 8325 La Mesa Boulevard.
Now, last thing, can you just give us a couple highlights of some of the artists' work and the styles that you have here? For those listeners who may not be familiar with the gallery, didn't make it out to the grand reopening, but who want to maybe, you know, perhaps stop by sometime, what can they see?
Most of our art is representational, but I do have a wall of abstracts because there are days when I think if I look at one more eucalyptus tree, I'm going to go screaming off into the night. So we like to think we have a balanced oeuvre here. I have over 60 artists that I show, so you get plenty of variety, even if you wish to stick within a particular genre. And we have still lifes, nudes, a lot of landscape paintings, the abstract works. We try to hit it all. What we do here, bottom line, is I only sell original paintings. No giclées, no lithographs, no prints, no kidding. That's who we are.
Shannon, I know you need to get back to your line of fans out there and guests, but for those who would like to learn more or visit the gallery, what is the website address where they can find you?
Google me up, odunfineart.com, and you can email me through the website if you have questions. I'll be on it to answer you, and I look forward to having you visit. Thank you, Miriam.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM, Descanso.
The search for a missing Ramona man has ended tragically. The medical examiner has determined that a body found in a field in Ramona is Carl Lee Salyer. The 67-year-old man was reported missing from his Ramona home on June 17th. Mr. Salyer suffered from Alzheimer's and Parkinson's disease. He had a feeding tube and required medications. His disappearance prompted an intense search involving dozens of sheriff's deputies, other law enforcement officers, and volunteers. His wife of 48 years told media that he had wandered off before, but never for long. Salyer's body was found about 2 miles from his home in a brushy field near Chablis Road and Whirlwind Lane. The remains were found 50 feet off the nearest road east of Mount Woodson Golf Course after an odor was reported to authorities. Autopsy results are pending to determine his cause of death. Reporting for East County Magazine, this is Leon Thompson.
This is Miriam Raftery with a report on how senior volunteers are helping keep communities safer and saving the county money. Ordinary citizens serving as senior volunteer patrol members are providing over $10 million worth of support services each year to law enforcement agencies in San Diego County. In an era of tight budgets, this is a significant asset to the community, according to a San Diego County grand jury report released this week. The grand jury recommends continuing and possibly expanding the senior volunteer programs. Law enforcement agencies, under the direction of the Sheriff's Department and 7 county municipal police departments, utilize the volunteer patrols to perform law enforcement-related tasks that do not require a sworn officer. These include assisting police agencies with traffic control, transportation of evidence, contacting homebound citizens to make sure they're safe, and issuing citations for fire lane and handicap parking violations. In addition, senior volunteer patrol members patrolling their communities in marked law enforcement vehicles do provide an additional police presence in the community at virtually no cost. The complete report can be found on the grand jury's website at www.sdcounty.ca.gov/grandjury. The East County Magazine Show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, Get trained to be a citizen journalist and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM, Descanso.
Welcome to Destination East County with your host, Ariel Johansson, bringing you the most exciting festivals, events, and attractions each week. This week's Destination East County has a rundown on 4th of July festivities throughout our inland region. No need to fight traffic to watch fireworks at the beach when you can choose from an array of venues right here in East County, where our cities and historic small towns show their patriotic spirit with parades, picnics, festivals, and fireworks. You'll hear about KNSJ's radio anniversary celebration at Mission Trails, plus we'll have a preview of some unique events coming up next week. From a firefighter's fishing derby to outdoor musical theater, twilight walks, a star party, and a super full moon jazz concert amid fragrant fields of lavender. So let's get started with Classic Car Nights, July 2nd and 3rd. Classic car shows will be held in El Cajon and La Mesa during the holiday week. The Cajon Classic Cruises rolls out on Wednesday night, July 2nd, down the city's main street for a salute to the military, while La Mesa's Back to the 50s Car Night revs up on Thursday, July 3rd in La Mesa's downtown village. Both events run from 5 to 8 p.m. Congressional members Scott Peters and Susan Davis will speak at Party in the Park at Mission Trails Regional Park Visitors Center on Wednesday, July 2nd at 6 p.m. The event is sponsored by the La Mesa Foothills Democratic Club, celebrating its 30th anniversary. Area residents are also invited to join a sunset celebration of the history, the present, and the future of nature in the largest urban park in San Diego. There will be barbecued burgers and hot dogs, as well as the club's annual pie contest to be judged by the dignitaries. The event will include discussions with additional candidates and politicians, as well as presentations by Jay Wilson, Executive Director of the Mission Trails Regional Park Foundation. Actor Steve Hyman will portray George Coles, the founder of Santee, for whom Coles Mountain is named. This week's Dinner and a Concert series will be held on Thursday, July 3rd, instead of the normal Friday night, in El Cajon, and presents the Jack Straw's Surf Band, performing Beach Boys tunes from 6 to 8 p.m. The city of El Cajon will host its annual 4th of July picnic and fireworks at Kennedy Park. The picnic begins at 1 p.m. with food, games, prizes, and train rides for children. Live musical entertainment begins at 3 p.m. with the highlight of the event, fireworks at 9 p.m. The city of Santee hosts its annual July 4th event, Santee Salutes, from 3:30 to 10 p.m. at Town Center Community Park East. This event includes live music featuring the 80s All-Stars, a patriotic ceremony, kids' fun zone with rides and more, and the grand finale, a dazzling fireworks display. Admission is free, though there is a fee at nearby parking lots, with parking costs supporting local youth sports leagues. Or you can take a free shuttle service from the Costco parking lot to the event. There's something for everyone at the Julian 4th of July Parade 2014. The parade steps off at noon and rolls down Main Street from Julian High School to Frank Lane Park. Spectators along Main Street can expect to see the Stars and Stripes, with the selection of It's a Grand Old Flag as the theme for this annual patriotic celebration. There will be a lineup of antique tractors, a troop of dancing gypsies, a pair of high-stepping Percheron draft horses, World War II veterans, Boy Scouts, and Girl Scouts. Pre-parade activities from 10 a.m. to 12 noon include a gunfight and bank robbery, patriotic musical presentation from the Emerald Society Bagpipe Band, appearances by Julian Princesses, two flyovers by Vintage Aircraft, and remarks by Congressman Duncan Hunter, and the unfurling of an enormous flag by volunteer audience members. Post-parade events include an outdoor concert in the park, featuring musicians ranging from the Mariachi Continental de San Diego to the Family Fiddle Camp Pickers and Fiddlers from 1:30 p.m. to 3:30 p.m. There will also be a barbecue, live music, and dancing at the American Legion, plus the Julian Woman's Club Historic Quilt Show. Jeremy's on the Hill restaurant just outside Julian will host a backcountry wine pairing dinner on the 4th of July at 5:30 p.m. The feast will feature organic local produce from Sage Mountain Farms and wines from both Shadow Mountain Vineyards and Sierra Roble Winery and Vineyard, both in the Warner Springs area. Dishes to savor range from organic fried chicken with green peppercorn cognac sauce to a blackberry cobbler topped with caramel sauce for dessert. For ticket and reservation information, you can call 760-765-1587. In the southeast hillside of El Cajon and Crest, the festivities take place at Nancy Jane Park on Suncrest Boulevard in Crest for the 4th of July Family Festival and Parade. Live music by Cowboy Angels and other musicians begins at 8 a.m., with road closures beginning at 9:15 a.m. Then the parade rolls out at 9:30 a.m., starting at South Lane Park and ending at Scenic Lane, just beyond Nancy Jane Park. The parade lineup includes Grand Marshals, the Patriot Guard Riders for the military, the Ladies Lawnchair Brigade of Crest, Pots and Pans Band, decorated antique tractors, motorcycles, floats, bicycles, golf carts, quads, along with floats, car clubs, horses, and fire trucks. Besides vendor booths and live music at the park, there will be food available for sale, hamburgers, hot dogs, drinks, snow cones, and more. There will also be a silent auction and a super raffle. Poway's old-fashioned 4th of July offers photo ops with Uncle Sam and President Lincoln, patriotic arts and crafts, Civil War reenactments, steam train rides, live music, games, food, and more from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. Free admission, and also check out the fireworks celebration at the Poway High School Stadium with games, DJ music, and fireworks from 7 to 10 p.m. The fireworks starting at 9 p.m. Fishing enthusiasts, rejoice. Take advantage of a free fishing day courtesy of California Department of Fish and Wildlife. Every year, they provide two free fishing days for people to try their hand at fishing. This year, those days are July 5th and September 6th. Fishing regulations such as bag and size limits, gear restrictions, report card requirements, fishing hours, and stream closures remain in effect. On Saturday, July 5th, KNSJ invites you to our community radio station's first anniversary party from 6:30 to 10 p.m. at the beautiful Mission Trails Regional Park Visitors Center. Come mix and mingle with our radio hosts and celebrity guests in a spectacular natural setting. Enjoy live music, Native American flute players, delicious food and drinks, stargazing, the museum, no host bar, and two stages of comedy acts and musical entertainment. At Wright's Field Preserve in Alpine, a flashlight series event, In Awe of the Stars, will be held on Saturday, July 5th from 8 to 10 p.m. Guests are encouraged to bring a chair or blanket and a flashlight to enjoy an evening of stargazing with guide Trevor Gardner, a local Eagle Scout. The group will walk into Wright's Field to take advantage of the darkness of the preserve for stargazing. The group will meet promptly at 8 p.m. in order to hike in together. This event is hosted by the Backcountry Land Trust. The new Mission Trails Regional Park art exhibit, A Softer View, features award-winning artist Catherine Gail Ackley. Each of her paintings represents a different way of approaching a topic, a different challenge, and an opportunity to create a softer view of the world. Next, an outdoor concert at the amphitheater features the Pomerado Saxophone Quartet at 3 p.m. on Sunday, July 6th. Kids bowl free nationwide all summer long. Throughout this nationwide program, children ages 15 and under who are registered can bowl two free games a day all summer long, June 16th through September 13th. Each center has different days that they make available. Regular shoe rental prices do apply. In East County, Parkway Bowl and Poway Fun Bowl are participating. Please see our website for Destination East County for the times, the days, and the website. Now for a preview of some fun summer attractions coming next week. Lindo Lake Park in Lakeside will be showing outdoor movies at dusk on July 11th when Monster University will be on the big screen. You can bring a beach chair, blankets, and of course popcorn. The Santee Firefighters Fishing Derby is set for Saturday, July 12th at Santee Lakes. From 6 to 11 a.m., Derby participants will receive a free day permit, worms, raffle ticket, hot dog lunch, and free door prizes while they last. The Fishing Derby is open only to children ages 3 to 17 years. Adults can help bait and cast, but not fish. Loaner poles are available with ID. There is a pre-registration date of July 9th that is required, and you can register online at www.santeefirefighters.org. The public is invited to the 45th annual Descanso Days Parade and Fair held Saturday, July 12th. This popular annual backcountry event will be held at the historic Descanso Town Hall. This year's parade theme is Bonnets and Boots, with prizes for the best parade entries in several categories. The parade starts at 10 a.m., but the roads close at 9:30 a.m., so plan to arrive early. You can also listen to live music while you enjoy pit barbecued beef cooked by the master chefs of Pine Valley Mountain Riders. Just Friends will start the musical lineup with their bluegrass twang at 11 a.m., followed by Steve Hill and the Hill Country Band on the KSON flatbed stage from 1 to 5 p.m. There will be a variety of activities, especially for kids, including wheelbarrow races, an egg toss, and a nail driving contest, as well as a best bonnet competition for all ages. You can also try your luck at raffles, and a silent auction will be held with prizes ranging from bales of hay to a family visit at Disneyland. With the scent of lavender in the air, a golden sunset, and colorful fields of lavender as a backdrop, Gregory Page will perform at the Keys Creek Lavender Farm in Valley Center. The concert will be held on Saturday, July 12th from 7 to 9:30 p.m. Guests are invited to bring a picnic dinner and enjoy an evening with Page, winner of the 2012 San Diego Music Awards Best Jazz Album, Shine, Shine, Shine. Page performs melodies and lyrics reminiscent of the 1920s sweet jazz era as a super full moon rises to illuminate the night sky on July 12th, promising to be a magical night. Reservations are required. Kids of all ages are invited to join the fun and showcase their pets at the first annual Pet Parade and St. Adelaide Parish Family Festival on July 12th at the Campo Baseball Field. The parade begins at 11 a.m., and the festival runs from 11 a.m. to 7 p.m. Parade entrants are invited to decorate a wagon or stroller for their pet, or walk with their pets on a leash, pet or pets. Pre-registration is required by 5 p.m. on Friday, July 11th, the day before. Drawings will also be held for prizes, including a half a steer to fill a freezer, donated by Wright Ranch of Potrero. The festival also includes vendor booths, an inflatable slide, and water combo, face painting, and refreshments. Santee Summer Concerts line up for their Blues and Barbecue Night on Thursday, July 17th, includes the Mercedes Moore Band and the Bayou Brothers with special guest Bill McGee. The festivities begin at 5:30 p.m., and there will be blues, barbecue, and a beer garden until 8:30 p.m. for this event held at Santee's Town Center Community Park East. Les Miserables on Mount Helix from July 17th through 21st, a live performance. This summer blockbuster will be staged atop Mount Helix July 17th through August 2nd. CCT is returning to Mount Helix after being away for 7 years. That's Christian Community Theater. Theatergoers will see Les Mis with stunning views of San Diego as the surrounding backdrop. Les Miserables is the world's longest-running musical. Discover a nation in the grip of revolution, where convict Jean Valjean is on the run, hunted relentlessly by the policeman Jay Vert. For breaking his parole, he must leave his past behind and keep his vow to raise the young orphaned Cosette. But with revolution in the air and Javert closing in, Jean Valjean has no choice but to fight for his life and sacrifice everything to protect the people he loves. You're invited to join Mission Trails Regional Park Guides this summer for free Saturday evening guided walks in the park to learn about changes that occur as the sun goes down. These walks last approximately an hour and a half and start from the parking lot across from the Kumeyaay Campground entrance on July 19th at 7:15 p.m., August 16th at 7:30 p.m., and September 20th at 6 p.m. There's also an owl prowl that you can sign up for. Visit www.mtrp.org. That's all for this week. You can find details on all of these events and more on our calendar and in our festivals and events section online at www.eastcountymagazine.org. If you have an event you'd like added to our calendar, or if you would like to sponsor the Destination East County show on KNSJ, you can contact editor at eastcountymagazine.org. We'll be back next week with more festivals, events, and attractions in San Diego's East County. See you around, East County!
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM, Descanso.
Welcome to East County Magazine Show's Jobs Talk, bringing you news about great jobs, job training opportunities, and growing our regional economy. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso. And today I have two very special guests with me. The first is Herman Reddick, and Herman is the Group Program Manager with the San Diego County Fire Authority. Herman, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you.
Secondly, I have Chief Greg Griswold, who is the Acting Unit Chief for CAL FIRE, and he's also the Acting Fire Chief for the new San Diego County Fire Authority. Chief Griswold, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Now, today we're going to be talking about career opportunities in firefighting, and I understand that there are a lot of those available these days. Can you give us an idea of how many career firefighters have been hired on locally through the County Fire Authority in the last year or so?
Well, actually, in the last since January, a lot of the volunteers, 56 volunteers, have decided to make firefighting a career for them. So that's where we're at, about 56.
Right. And we're talking about people who came in as a volunteer with a minimal stipend, got all the training that a professional firefighter gets, and then were hired on to work for the County Fire Authority or CAL FIRE, correct?
Yeah, that's correct. It starts off with the minimal training that's required by law and mandates, and then they're brought in to be a volunteer firefighter for the County Fire Authority.
Very good. And, of course, many of those volunteers went on to get jobs as full-time, well-paid firefighters working for CAL FIRE or the U.S. Forest Service or many other fire agencies around our region. So this really is a path to a future. Now, the issue of getting volunteers for the rural fire stations has actually become much more difficult than it used to be. And I understand that's because the laws at the state or federal level have changed to make these standards much more stringent. Can you tell us, you know, in the old days, what did a person have to do to be a volunteer firefighter?
Great question, Miriam. I started off as a volunteer firefighter over 30 years ago, and the requirements then to start off was, well, one, are you breathing, and two, can you get to the fire station? And I was successful in both of those. But yeah, basically, it was on-the-job training. You got hired, you got your gear, and you started going to calls immediately. And then you just continue going to school on your own. We went to Millmar College, you got your EMT and those things because you wanted to better yourself to hopefully have a career in the fire service.
Right.
Well, now we fast forward 30 years later into 2014, and basically, to put it in a nutshell, is the same training that a volunteer firefighter is required to have. The basic volunteer firefighter training is the same as a basic career firefighter training. So there's no difference. So you have to start off with a basic level, and all we're trying to do is follow the mandates that are upon us.
And they've also imposed much more stringent physical requirements. So even some of these guys who've been volunteer firefighters for 20, 30, 40 years out there are saying they've had to retire because they can't pass the physical. So in fact, there's nobody manning the store sometimes.
Yes, a lot of the physical requirements are more stringent than what they were before. And when we send folks through the fire academy, they go through a very demanding physical routine.
Right.
So that
you got to be able to carry somebody out of a burning building and all that.
Right. Carry hose, ladders. There's different things that you have to do. Mm-hmm. They have you running throughout the day to different tasks that the firefighters will have to go through. But it is more physical today than it might have been in the past.
Yeah. So is it a safe statement that the need is much greater right now for recruiting volunteer firefighters, even those who are using it as a career path to move upward, than it was in the past when maybe there might have been a lot of folks out in the community who were perfectly happy to come in, volunteer, and be a firefighter?
Yes, in the past, a lot of volunteers, they might work at the store, and then when the sound or
fire bell went off,
then they would just leave the store and go down and hop on the fire engine. Now it's a 24/7 operation where they have to be physically ready to meet the demands of today's fire service.
The County Fire Authority and Cal Fire, of course, did a wonderful job during the last fires, these wildfires that we had, of really getting everybody to safety's sake, with help with the sheriff, fighting these major fires. And even though they were burning all over, I think there were a few dozen homes that were lost, but nothing like what we saw in 2003 or 2007, where there were thousands of homes lost and, you know, hundreds of thousands evacuated. So obviously there's a lot of things that are improving under the County Fire Authority. One of the gaps, so to speak, has been that the rural fire stations, because of new laws for training and stuff, we're seeing some of the rural fire stations where there just aren't enough volunteer firefighters to man them. There have been some dark days and so forth. So what we're here to talk about today is how the county can go about filling those and what the career opportunities are for people who want to help your community by becoming a volunteer firefighter and then have an opportunity to be hired on ultimately as a career firefighter with either Cal Fire or one of the many other firefighting agencies around. I guess some of them go on to U.S. Forest Service. And
that's correct.
Yeah, U.S. Forest Service. Some even get positions in other states like Texas or Pennsylvania.
Yeah, so good career opportunity. So let's talk about what it takes to become a volunteer firefighter. And first of all, when we say volunteer, you're not entirely working for free. There is a very modest stipend. How much do volunteer firefighters get paid while they're going through the training?
Well, volunteers, once they go through the process and have been deemed ready to be volunteers in the stations, they receive $95 per shift.
And how long is a shift?
A shift is 24 hours.
Okay, so $95 every 24-hour shift.
Correct. And we encourage all of them to at least do 3 shifts a month. Many of them do more than 3 shifts a month, but at least 3 shifts a month, we are targeting that for the volunteers.
Okay. And are there any other expenses on top of that? Do they get mileage allowances or meal allowances or anything?
Well, that's what the purpose of the stipend, to cover some of those incidental costs.
Who is eligible to apply and be brought on as a volunteer firefighter? What are the physical requirements and the background requirements that you have to meet?
Well, starting out, the minimum requirements for a volunteer in our program, you have to be 18 years of age, high school diploma or GED, valid California driver's license, and you have to have the ability to pass background and medical.
How much training do you need to go through?
Well, the training, we'll look at your applications when you first bring it forward. what we do is on our website, we have a interest card that candidates are able to fill out. And through that interest card, we'll review all of their qualifications. If this is the first time that they've been involved with the fire service, we'll recommend some of the courses at community colleges that they should take to improve their knowledge about fire services.
Okay, and then you also have firefighting academies, don't you, that they can go through as well? And emergency medical training, I understand, that they learn?
Yes, all of our candidates should have their emergency medical technician qualification cards. Mm-hmm. And those are, you can obtain those through going through courses throughout San Diego at community colleges, as well as meeting with emergency medical services, and that's with the County of San Diego. So, they can provide more information.
So if someone comes into this who doesn't already have training in any of these areas, let's say someone straight out of high school wants to apply, for example, how many weeks does it take to reach the point where you would be getting the $100 stipend and beyond that where you would be considered to be trained as a firefighter?
Well, somebody that's coming in that has no knowledge or no experience, we will be recommending them to go to community college.
Mm-hmm.
There's several courses that they should
take. They're at their own expense, or is there any funding to help them with that?
That would be at their own expense.
Okay.
So they would go through community college courses. They have fire science courses. And it usually will take about 6 months to get through those courses.
Mm-hmm. 6 months, okay.
And then their EMT course, they can take that at the same time at the community colleges. They have those there mm-hmm. as well. That depends on the individual, how long that will take. Some do it very quickly, and others it might take 6 months to a year.
Okay.
So it depends on the individual.
Okay, so we're talking usually 6 months, maybe a year. Now, once you become a volunteer firefighter and you're getting this $100 stipend and you need to volunteer at least 3 shifts a month, is that something that people can work around other jobs? In other words, are you on call anytime the fire service needs you? Or can you say, I can work only certain days of the week or certain weekends or something?
Well, what happens is those that are in our system, there's schedules that are posted the prior month. They can sign up for certain days that they are available.
Mm-hmm.
And depending on who else has signed up on those days, if there's no vacancies on a particular day, then they'll have to search for another day that meets their schedule.
Okay, but there is some flexibility. In other words, you could do this as sort of a part-time.
Yes, most of our candidates have a full-time job doing something else as a prepare to become career individual.
Okay. Now, for those who don't want to be a volunteer forever, and they don't want to work for this $100 stipend for the rest of their life, a lot of folks can't afford that, but they have their eye on moving up and advancing and becoming a career-paid firefighter or perhaps an emergency medical technician. Can you tell us about what the opportunities are there and how much the salaries might be for those kinds of jobs at the entry level and what you might expect to earn over a career with that?
Well, actually, it's a very good question. Many different agencies have different opportunities as far as benefit packages or salaries, et cetera. But I'll give you some ballpark. Once successful, you become a career firefighter. There's also the career firefighter that you start off as a seasonal one firefighter. And as a firefighter one seasonal, you can work anywhere from 4 to 9 months out of the year. And that's for Cal Fire and or the U.S. Forest Service, and even Bureau of Land Management also hires seasonals.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of our own department, as far as a benefit package, a seasonal will get roughly a monthly salary of about $4,000 a month, plus they will get medical, dental, and vision as part of their benefit package, along with start contributing towards a retirement.
So that's a pretty nice entry salary of $48,000 a year or so. And over time, if you work there a number of years, what do these salaries tend to max out on? Or if someone advances and they want to become a deputy chief or chief or something, are there some pretty good long-term career potential for moving up the ladder, so to speak?
Oh, I think that's the goal of a lot of our firefighters that come into the system. Yeah, you start off as a seasonal, and then we have exams from that point for permanent status, a firefighter 2 or a driver, which we call a fire apparatus engineer. At that point, then you go to fire captain, and then it's endless, because a captain in our organization has 11 different functions that a captain can do, and then there's you get into chief, battalion chief, division chief, deputy chief, all the way up into where you could be the director of the state of California.
Very good. And a number of these, I believe, are six-figure salaries. Is that correct?
I would say you have to get upwards of the assistant fire chiefs to be anywhere close to the six-figure.
Above. Okay, mm-hmm. There you go. Now, there are also opportunities in emergency medical. Tell us about those. What's involved to move up into that? How many jobs there are in that? And if you could give us an idea of what someone might expect to earn.
Well, as far as what they might expect to earn, I don't have that information. But mm-hmm. As far as those that are EMT qualified, there's plenty of ambulance companies and hospitals that are looking for EMTs. And there's also the opportunity to move up and be paramedics.
Very good.
And paramedics and most of the fire service agencies, the cities, they have paramedic engine. So there's that opportunity for them to be on career stations that are paramedic.
That's a good point, Herman, because the fire service today is really in the municipality type of mm-hmm. the fire service is paramedic. We are moving towards that in our own department, and all the departments throughout the state are moving to paramedic. So that is very important mm-hmm. to consider.
Other than just the salary and the benefits, what are some of the advantages of being a firefighter? Chief Griswold, you've been doing this a lot of years, I imagine. What are some of the things that you like best about this as a career?
You know, I'm going on about 30 years in the fire service. I have to say I've enjoyed almost every minute of it. But quite frankly, we spend so much time with the people at work that they become your second family. If you looked at from the time you started to the time you retire, you're probably spending almost half that time with your second family, which is the fire service family. And to me, the friendships, the camaraderie, the trust that's built is second to none, and that's what I find most enjoyable.
Yeah, and I would imagine it's certainly a very noble profession in that you're serving your community, you're giving back, and in some cases saving lives. So that has to be a satisfying feeling when you go home at night.
It's very satisfying, but like any work, it is work. And when we have those destructive fires, I can tell you firsthand that it's not always fun to watch that or to be part of that. It's quite frankly, there's a little part of you that leaves every time when it comes to those devastating fires. So that's the hard part of it.
Yeah. There certainly is a risk involved, of course, as well. But that said, what is the safety record for Cal Fire?
Well, the safety record, I don't have those figures in front of me, but I know that we have a very vigorous safety program. And any time there's a, what we call a near miss or an incident mm-hmm. where it occurs to safety, we have what we call a SART team, which is a serious accident review team that comes in and looks at everything to make sure that we can learn something from that particular incident.
Right. Statistically, I've read, though, that firefighting actually is much safer than, although there's clearly a risk, than, say, being a police officer, for example.
Yeah, I know that we've done several strides in recent years with different capabilities of our breathing apparatus, our self-contained breathing apparatus, mm-hmm. to keep those toxins out of our body. So I know that the fire service has done a great deal with that. We've improved our PPE, which is our personal protective equipment,
right.
and making things a little more maneuverable with us and cooler. So, yeah. Yes, we have made some strides.
So, again, we're talking with Chief Greg Griswold, who is the acting fire chief for San Diego County Fire Authority, as well as Cal Fire locally, and with Herman Reddick, who's the group program manager with the San Diego County Fire Authority, for those of you that are tuning in late. And we are talking about opportunities to become a volunteer firefighter, which starts at a stipend of $100 a day after about 6 months of training, and then the opportunities from there to move up into career firefighting opportunities. So, once again, for those who tuned in late, can you give us an idea of about how many of your trainees who started as volunteers got jobs as firefighters within the last year or so since we've been working at this with the County Fire Authority?
Well, over the last few months, I would say about 56 received career jobs with CAL FIRE, U.S. Forest Service, or other agencies across the country.
There you go. And how many went through the volunteer program in the last in that same period of time?
Through the volunteer program, we had about 55 that were brought into our program.
So that's pretty high. In other words, you're graduating up about as many of them moving on to career firefighting positions as are coming in the doors as trainees for the volunteer program. That sounds like pretty good odds if you're a job hunter out there.
Yes, this is a great career opportunity for young, motivated individuals to move forward and obtain a career in the fire service.
Very good. If listeners out there want to get more information about becoming a volunteer firefighter and getting that training toward either being a long-term volunteer serving the community or moving up into a career path, who should they contact and where can they get more information?
For more information, it is on our website, and the website address is www.sdcounty.ca.gov/SDCFA.
Okay, and we will be posting that on our website as well, so listeners, if you missed that, you can go to eastcountymagazine.org and we'll have a story up all about this. Is there anything else that either of you would like to add that you think listeners or prospective firefighters should know?
Well, actually, I do have one thing, and thank you for the opportunity. You know, with this recent event to the conflagration that we just recently occurred here in San Diego County, we, for the first time that I can recall, the fire service thanking the community for one. Most everyone had really good defensible space around their homes. And two, they adhered to the evacuation orders. So that's what I like to do is just take this opportunity. One, remind everybody that we still need to look at our defensible space. It is May. We're heading into a long season that, quite frankly, there's a lot of us that are a bit nervous. So
yeah.
Please, you know, do what you can to make yourself successful as it pertains to defensible space.
Very important to help the firefighters to help save your home before the next wildfire strikes.
Yes.
And also, volunteering is a noble service, and those that are interested in the fire service, please volunteer and be part of our program.
Well, very good. You can help keep your community safe. I want to thank both of you very, very much for joining us today on the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM, Descanso.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the San Diego Performance Academy for the use of their studio, to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Donnie Gentile, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, A.K. Jules, Brian Boyko, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, and Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road. We also thank the County of San Diego for a community enhancement grant to support our Destination East County segment. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.